And now, as promised, as I say, it's about a quarter past seven here in WRFU-LP Urbana. We're going to continue a discussion. In studio with me, actually, a special treat for me is my father, Liam Boyle, who is visiting from Ireland at the moment. And we visited... We did the Great American Road Trip last week. We went down through Memphis, stopping off there, down to New Orleans, and then back up to here in Urbana. While in New Orleans, we got to see some of the more devastated areas. People will have heard of the devastation in the Lower Ninth Ward and the like, as well as the rest of the city, St. Charles Avenue area, the French Quarter, and so on. Quite a bit of contrast there. What I wanted to talk first about was first you were in Ireland when Katrina hit a number of years ago, back in 2005, late August of 2005. What are your memories of how that was being reported in Ireland? What were people's impressions of what was happening in Ireland, or what did people hear about Katrina and what was happening in New Orleans?
Well, I remember it well. The coverage was there was a lot of coverage of the hurricane, both before and after. Even though it's at the other side of the Atlantic, it was being well covered, and we knew that there was the possibility of some serious damage happening as a result of this this hurricane. And when it rolled in and did its damage, there was total shock, I would say, would be the response of people in Ireland, that such a thing could happen in the US and that the response to it could be so inadequate. As the story rolled out over the days, and we could see the devastation on the screens, and we could see that that somehow or other the US didn't seem to be able to manage this this problem. It didn't seem to be able to get aid into people. It didn't seem to be able to get the people out of the city. The people in the dome, the sports arena,
yeah,
who were there for a seemed a long period without any proper management or without any proper support going in. And disturbing because of the human cost of the tragedy that was unfolding before our eyes, but also disturbing because we knew of the resources of the US and that these resources weren't being deployed in a sensible manner. Just seemed very strange and baffling.
Mm-hmm. It definitely was something, I think, very much the case here too. It was kind of slow motion before your eyes that you figured at some point, something has to happen now. Now's the point where, the kind of magical emergency plan is rolled into action. But there was no point really where that actually happened.
Yeah, that's the way it seemed. It just seemed that people were watching it happen and nothing was being done. Now, I know that that's lots of people in various different ways were doing, valuable work, but it just seems so inadequate to the scale of the tragedy.
Mm-hmm. Now, we headed down last week. We got into New Orleans late Wednesday night, there until Saturday morning. One of the areas, as I said, as I mentioned at the top, that we visited, we saw some of the a small area within the Lower Ninth Ward. The Lower Ninth Ward. You might explain to listeners who may not remember, one of the lower lying areas in New Orleans.
Yeah, the whole of New Orleans, as it was explained to us, is you know, like a basin. And the, you know, the French Quarter and the city centre are on the rim of that basin, and not so, not so far below sea level as to take the full brunt of the problems that happen. But the Lower Ninth and other areas are much further below sea level, so that when the levees were breached, the water was in some cases 25 feet in high, may have been more than that. That's one figure that stands out, which 25 feet, if you think about it, is up to the top of a two-story building. And so from that point of view, it was the houses that were caught in that thing were just completely submerged. People went into their attics, went onto the roofs to try to escape. Many hundreds of people didn't escape, and people were drowned in their houses, drowned in their attics where they mm-hmm. went to try to escape. And it was obviously very, very serious thing. You know, we'd some difficulty about making this this tour of the city that we were offered. The idea was this disaster tourism,
mm-hmm.
but on the other hand, to have gone to the New Orleans and just to have gone to the French Quarter and not to have acknowledged the difficulties that people had had, the houses that were wiped out and are still gone, still mm-hmm. still so little work done on rebuilding them. The hundreds of thousands of people who had vacated the city and still haven't come back because there's nothing yet for them to come back to. I mean, it was important that we know that side of the story, you know. Mm-hmm. So from that point of view, I was glad to have made that that journey. But on the other hand, it did feel at times a little bit fireistic in terms of being brought on a tour of people's sadness,
misery, and
misery.
Yes.
You know,
yeah, it is one of those very difficult balancing acts. I know we discussed it in advance, and I think we kind of tried to figure out negotiate a way through it, as you say, without ignoring, going and saying let's spend 2-3 days on Bourbon Street, but at the same time without kind of trying to be sensitive in bringing ourselves to awareness of how things currently were.
Yeah, and one of the things that struck out, it was in many ways New Orleans is like leaving the United States. It's like going to another country because it's there's such a sense of a laid back fun. Not to say that the rest of the United States isn't fun, but there was just
a kind of a Latin culture,
French and Spanish influences everywhere, and lovely music everywhere. And one of the things that struck us was that wherever we went, people thanked us for being there. So they see tourism as an important aspect to their rebuilding. You know, it's a major industry in the city, but it's an industry that they have two minds about, because on the one hand, so many people have lost their livelihoods. On the other hand, if they're to rebuild, they have to invite people back in. They have to, they have to be fun. But in fact, they are fun. They are lovely people. They're very friendly, and it was, it was a great experience that way. It was a very enjoyable experience, So from that point of view,
a lot of human contact. I think one of the things when you mentioned about the kind of that difficulty that New Orleans residents feel wondering about, you know, about being feeling conflicted about tourism. I was reminded of the fact that New Orleans is famous for its streetcars, its trams. The first streetcar to be brought back into service was the St. Charles streetcar. And that's significant. On the one hand, it's the one that's best known to tourists, so draws in a tourist population. That's what they want. That's what's going to bring in revenue in terms of people being attracted to that. On the other hand, St. Charles Avenue is the most, at least of the portions we saw, is the richest part of New Orleans. New Orleans is very much a segregated city, very much districted by race and by class. And the fact that these richer populations are the ones whose trolley line, whose streetcar is first coming back, is something that, again, controversial and feeds into this thing of to what extent and in what way should tourism, you know, what role does tourism play in economic development, and how does that fit into class and race issues?
Yeah, a city is primarily for its people, for its own people, and you can't go around having, you know, street carnivals in a small part of a city while the rest of the, well, you can, but you shouldn't, you know. Mm-hmm. You should have a situation where everybody else, you know, where the ordinary residents are, you know, in misery or whatever, you know. It's a very hard one to negotiate. It's a very hard one to know how you should, you know, how you should be in some place, you know. It's interesting because, you know, the same sort of conflict that we had there in New Orleans that was in our face in various different ways, we were presented with that on the way down. We had, the big long road trip that, you know, coming from Ireland seems very odd because in Ireland, if we'd done that trip, it would have meant going up and down the whole country three times, you know. Mm-hmm. because the country's so small, so covering that sort of distance by car just was a wonderful experience in a lot of ways. But on the way down, of course, we stopped in Memphis, and in Memphis then we went to Graceland, and in Graceland, the home of Americana, I suppose,
bubblegum culture,
culture around pink Cadillacs and whatever frills and funny costumes or whatever, you know. And then we also visited the Lorraine Motel, the Civil Rights Museum there. Mm-hmm. And at the Civil Rights Museum, we could see a history of America that everyone knows about, but that sometimes you just need to be reminded about it full on. You need to sort of to pause over it and just consider, you know, how were these things possible? Why did these things happen? Why did more people not say no? Why, you know, how was it allowed to continue for so long, right into the 1960s, and beyond? But in terms of a very vicious, obvious, unapologetic racism that was allowed to be there right up into the 1960s. At least after that, racism has to be more covert, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But it was an extraordinary insight into the whole history of the country, and to sort of, you know, to have those two experiences on the same day was, it was just interesting juxtaposition and something that makes you think. And mm-hmm. in a sense, going down then, continuing on down to New Orleans was a continuation of that opportunity to reflect on humanity, I suppose.
Yeah, and kind of have our eyes open as we're kind of critically assessing our own experiences.
And wondering about things, mulling things over, I suppose, you know, in sort of way. As well as having plenty of pints and listening to plenty of jazz music and dancing along Bourbon Street and having coffee and bayonets and Café du Monde. So, I mean, it was all there.
Social education need not be without its reward.
Well, no, you have to, you know, you live life as you wonder about it, you know, and that's...
Okay. Well, we'll leave it at that. We're at 7:30 here on WRFU. Show coming up in about 30 minutes. In the meantime, we'll leave you back to automation and public affairs programming. Thank you very much for listening, and do stay tuned.